For February 23rd, 2018, we talk about some Year of the Dog celebrations, pray, and we ask you how you name your characters in games. Welcome to Level 231. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meinsmith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome. I'm trying to think of business to do at the front, but I can't.
What about banter?
Banter? We could do banter. Did you guys see my tweet about my brother declaring psychological warfare on me?
Oh, no. What happened? I feel like maybe I can get in on this.
Yeah. So I'll repeat it. And, you know, hopefully people who already know the story will appreciate the extra detail. This was late last week. Step outside to go get some groceries. And there's a package on my front step. Okay, this isn't unusual. However, I don't remember ordering something. I'm generally aware of when stuff is coming in. So I think, okay, this is weird. It's from Amazon. It's addressed to me. Okay. Open it up, and inside there is a UV flashlight intended for like the on label use is for detecting pet urine, you know. But like
the off label is for fighting vampires.
And you know, just really freaking bees out. No, off label is like, oh, this is what they use on those shows about how filthy your hotel room is to just show you that cum is everywhere.
Yeah.
So I didn't look inside it because there was a note, and I figured, okay, well there has to be, there's only one person that I can, you know, if it's not him, then this is really worrisome. So I call my brother. He's like, yeah, I had a coupon. I figured that'd be a fun thing to send to you, you know. And, you know, obviously for me, like, that is it's a cursed object, because immediately I put the batteries in and I was just hunting my apartment up and down for,
oh, why?
Because it's in my house and I have it, and there are batteries. I couldn't. It was the first thing I did.
It's like the quote from The Last Jedi: offered you something you wanted and you went straight to it. You didn't even resist. the dark light side.
The dark light side. So I've got this. The more upsetting alternative would have been if somebody else was beyond, like, the hosts who have my address and you know, just like in general, there's a very small number of people who both have my address and would want to torture me like this. So if it fell outside of either of those sets, then immediately I would have been far more concerned. But this is fully predictable behavior.
That's good.
Yeah, so that's my brother declaring psychological warfare on me.
So in your house is completely sanitary now?
I'm just going around with Lysol wipe, just scrub. No, not really. Like, it was, it honestly hasn't driven me that crazy. Like, it's a novelty. Like, oh, my kitchen cabinets are filthy with, like, cooking splatter that I thought I wiped up, but it's not gone. Stuff like that.
Hmm. You, like, a week from now, you're going to be like, you know, that was a really thoughtful gift. I get so much use out of this. Is amazing.
Yeah.
See, I just have accepted that my place is filthy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. You know, you have to come to grips with the fact that everything is covered in dander and piss. But yeah. But, you know, not all that fluoresces is cum. So.
Just wait till you have kids. There are all sorts of fluids that fluoresce.
Yeah.
Yeah, like tonic water.
This
like
is
tonic
true.
Water. That's what I was thinking of.
Oh, anybody else have any anecdotes that are as funny or funnier than that? I will accept no less.
So I feel like I spoke about this in the pre-roll, but I feel like it bears whatevering. Chinese New Year was this past week. Uh-huh. I guess it was on Friday. I guess I can say it was actually on a day.
Right. I mean,
that's how years work, you know.
People can also look it up. Chinese New Year's was recently, and you live in Chinatown in San Francisco, so things have been on and popping, quite literally, from what I hear.
Yeah. So basically, it's been 24/7 fireworks just all over the freaking place. And people apparently decide that my street was the street that you do fireworks on if you're a really cool person. So, yeah, it's I never realized how extreme people take some of this stuff. I took an Uber somewhere, and the driver was from Vietnam and got talking about it. And he was saying he bought $200 worth of those, like, black cat, you know, the kind that are, like, all in the string and, you know. And basically, like, coiled them into a massive cylinder and, like, lit them off. And that was his thing. And that's that's seems to be, like, the thing to do. And it literally sounds like there's, like, ocean waves crashing. It's really insane. Also, the Falun Gong people had a parade, which was kind of interesting.
Is that the cult?
Maybe. Well, no, I kind of laugh because, like, from what I've been able to tell, because, like, I looked it up afterwards, like, they seem super, super harmless, but they made the mistake of, like, being successful in China because, you know, the government kind of likes to have its monopoly on, you know, successful organizations.
Right.
But their parade just really did not do a good job of convincing you they're not a cult.
Okay.
Just because, like, there was a ton of, like, people, like, marching, like, doing their, like, Qigong exercises, like, all in synchronization. And I actually took a snapshot of one of their banners. I feel like was probably meant to communicate the idea of, like, you know, we're bringing, you know, joy and, you know, spreading, you know, to the world, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But what it actually ended up saying is literally, we're coming for you.
Cool. Yeah, so
that was kind of interesting, but
that's how I express my joy to the world.
It's, you know, it's the year of the dog, and now they celebrate by terrifying every dog in yes. mile radius. Yeah. So I'm kind of surprised. So when you guys lived in Clifton off of the University of Cincinnati campus, wasn't it the case that people were just always firing off fireworks at for no reason? Or yes. Was that okay?
That was definitely
fireworks for no reason at best.
I told you about the time the house next to me fired a fireworks if I fired like a bottle rocket at one of the police women of Cincinnati, you know, the TV show. So they mm-hmm. decided to just empty the house of a party and start just nightclubbing everybody.
Oh my gosh.
Like, it's not like police brutality isn't funny, but it was very amusing to watch it because, you know, the police television lady was down, like, giving it on the street interview saying, yeah, they, you know, we came responding to a, you know, to a fireworks call. You know, they seemed okay. And then just like, mother, and then pulls out the nightstick and then boom, the entire house goes down.
Oh man.
Like, yeah.
Although,
go ahead.
I feel like, not to justify, but, like, that's pretty blatantly asking for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, ruin their night, I guess. I guess I'm happy that their night was ruined. I'm not so much happy that police, beat up some kids. But, like, man, that was a sight to behold.
Oh, Clifton.
I just always remember when Dennis and I were rooming together, there's a time where there had been, like, multiple nights in a row, someone just blaring music till 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. And then one night, you know, that's happening. And all of a sudden, we both hear, you know, like 3 or 4 gunshots and the music goes off.
Oh, Jesus.
And it was never, never on late again.
Hopefully because the person was frightened and not because they were hurt.
I don't know. That was the, I think the only time we actually, like, were completely sure they were gunshots enough that we reported it.
Right, which is what you want to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
One time, this girl pulled up next to our house and started blaring Blind Melon's "No Rain," like very obviously, like out the car, like all the windows down, the volume cranked way up, and she was standing outside the car and like yelling up at like a neighbor's house, like one or two houses down. Like saying, "I know you're sad. I'm here for you." And it's like "No Rain" for like 40 minutes.
Like, "I'm not sad. Can you turn it down?"
I don't know quite what to do with that. I mean,
Ben, you've been pretty quiet.
Yeah, I've been listening to Blind Melon "No Rain," so sorry.
You had to put it on mute to get rid of all the gunshots.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it is Austin. I can only presume that it is pretty much 24/7, like cowboys having gunfights in the streets.
I mean, there are horses who people like casually ride horses down the street from time to time.
What?
So, yeah, it's the only city I've been to where I've seen that before.
That's
just
great.
Walk to the grocery store and you pass somebody on a horse, and it's like, oh, okay, I guess you can do that.
Yeah, nothing in the rules says.
That's where you say morning, and they say morning, you say, not you, the horse.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that sounds like some banter.
Banter achieved.
Banter,
excellent banter.
Achieved. Cool, so we've got the usual kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
The Brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Let's see. Since it follows from what we were just talking about, David, what is what's going on in Overwatch?
Sure. So Overwatch, has been having a event to celebrate the Chinese New Year. However, they announced, I believe today, and then just did it, that they were going to be having the first annual Overwatch Puppy Rumble in order to benefit several humane pet shelters.
Okay.
And it ended up, I actually haven't been able to figure out, I've been watching the video, and I can't figure out what the competition actually was. It's mostly what I've got from it is just tons and tons of cute puppies cosplaying as Overwatch characters.
I approve. Okay.
I think my favorite is there's a little, looks like maybe almost, I don't know, like a Chihuahua mix or something that's got Tracer's like leather jacket. And there's also a puppy that is D.Va's mecha that's just like has like bunny ears on its head.
Yeah.
My favorite is the little puppy Reaper, who's got the bandolier for shotgun shells, but he's only got room for three. He's so small.
That's all he needs. He's very efficient.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, combination of Overwatch and puppies or dogs and pictures of dogs and cosplay, like it would be dumb of them not to do that. So
why haven't we thought of it before?
Kind of seems to be a match. Not so much made in heaven as preordained.
Yeah. And it looks like almost all of the puppies have been adopted, apparently. Awesome. Although there is at least one left in Austin, so Ben, you could get in on this.
We have
two. He's a Hanzo main.
Oh yeah, never mind. He's not welcome in this house.
Filth monster. Nice.
It was fun. Yep. I think they like nominally it was about some kind of like capture the flag type of thing with puppies, but I don't know if they actually played capture the flag or just kind of rolled around cutely on the floor.
Yeah. This is the
they
first.
Did...
Oh, good.
Oh, I was going to say they did set up the kind of puppy version of, I forget what stage, what's the stage that's like actually Hanzo's like out hideout or whatever. You know the one I mean.
Hanamura?
It's just like, yeah, yeah. Their like version of that. That's kind of entertaining.
So this is the first year that I can remember, and maybe it's just, you know, the first year that I noticed, like, every internet, every public-facing internet company really going hog on the Chinese New Year, which, like, that's cool. But, like, Steam did a sale, GOG did a sale. I just saw a bunch of promotions like that. I'm very curious, like, what is different about this year compared to last year?
What was last year? The year of the what?
Rooster?
Oh, that's right. Puppies are way cuter than roosters.
Everybody likes dogs.
Yeah.
Way easier to commercialize.
Yeah. Dogs sell.
Yeah. And to be fair, if Blizzard had announced the Rooster Rumble, people probably would have gotten the wrong idea.
Right.
But no, I don't know. Like, I assume some of it is like the puppies thing. I'm guessing some of it's probably also like, you know, China in general is getting to be more
prominent, you know, on the world stage. Yeah.
Although I do feel like we should say that, like, pretty much all of Southeast Asia, like, celebrates this holiday.
Yeah.
Like, we call it Chinese New Year, but, like, pretty much everyone.
Well, celebrations are good.
The thing I know that's controversial, don't get is how do they decide? Is there any objective way for why, like, this point in the lunar cycle is New Year? Because, like, I believe, like, Jewish holidays are on a lunar cycle as well, but their New Year is, like, some other time of the year.
I have literally no idea, and I don't want to venture a comment and sound dumber than I actually am.
I only figuratively have no idea.
Well, literally and figuratively mean the same thing, so.
Oh, no.
officially, as defined by Webster.
Yeah. So I've got a story here that is actually a follow-up to something I talked about a while back. Remember when I had the story about the disarmament event firing on Metal Gear Solid 5 on PC?
Mm-hmm.
Well, turns out Konami has gone digging and sleuthing, and they issued an apology on Twitter saying, hey, we're sorry for any inconvenience you might have suffered, which is weird. However, they do have an explanation. It was hackers, but it has something to do with the wrong value being sent to the game servers. So some way that they calculated the integer that says this is how many nukes there are active in the world, hackers targeted that and raised it up so high that it actually rolled over and triggered.
That's entirely within the spirit of this whole thing, though.
True. It could have been intentional. And Kojima's not around to ask. He's hanging out with Mads. Yeah, so that's what happened. It was a good old-fashioned, I'm going to say this phonetically, because it's a word that I've seen before, buffer overrun. There we go.
Buffer overrun. They were using an unsigned it?
I don't know. I don't think. I mean, maybe. Like, that's totally possible. They were using some kind of unsigned integer.
Well, that's what. Because if it overflowed and they weren't using that, it would go to a negative number. I don't know how the game would have handled that.
Wait, would it?
If it's assigned
it? Two's complement style?
See, all the words you guys are using make sense individually, but I'm not following at all.
I just like eventually if it overflowed and it affected the bit that affected whether or not it was signed, then it would just immediately take it. I don't know what value it would be negative, but like it's an on or off whether it's positive or negative. So,
see, yeah, it depends on how they store the number, because that's one way to do it. But you can also do it in two's complement, which I actually never actually took that course, so right. I have no idea how it actually works.
Yeah.
But I know it's not that way.
I could just see them taking a careless attitude toward this thing otherwise might not have, you know.
This thing that's entirely, yeah, exactly.
This thing that is completely implausible and hackers just took advantage of it. It's like
they learned nothing from Gandhi.
You mean Gandhi and Civ?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, this affects literally nothing. Like, there's no reason anybody would be angry about this. There's really no reason anybody would care. But I thought that it was interesting that Konami internalized this as enough of a PR problem that they had to investigate and then answer for it, as opposed to just saying, yeah, I don't know, computers are weird sometime.
I don't know, like, I mean, granted, this still in the grand, you know, scheme of events isn't too relevant, but I know, you know, when I was doing, Metal Gear Solid and got into a little bit the, like, online mode, you know, a lot of the guides I was reading and stuff like that were written by people that were, you know, like, their thing was, you know, going and stealing people's nukes and getting rid of them. Like, there was definitely, like, I don't know, like, a core of people where, like, either making the nukes or getting rid of them became the game.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I can see that.
I can see that, yeah. Dennis, what is this indie game about online haters?
Yeah, this is an interesting little tidbit that launched on Steam. A game called Dab on Em Haters.
So, okay, so I said haters at the start there. I hate the word haters. I hate that we have a president who has regularly used the word haters in the past and is continuing to do it.
I didn't know he did.
Isn't that the word you use about him?
No.
Not you.
When has that ever stopped him before?
The thinking humans of the world.
I mean, I would refer to him as a hate monger, but the idea that there are people whose legitimate criticisms of you are just here because they're haters. It's a verbal tick of people who want to be above criticism.
I understand
what this game is going for. This actually, I consider buying this. But what is Dab on Em Haters?
Yeah, so it's interesting. This is like the most succinct way I could think of to describe this is papers please for YouTube comments. The idea is that you're a vlogger, and you have to read through your comment section and either like comments that are nice or dab on comments that are mean. And it pulls a very realistic set of comments that you might find on YouTube, language, obscene social commentary and all. And the idea is to go through and you know, upvote or like the ones that are good, downvote the ones that are bad as fast as possible to stay ahead of that stream of comments.
Jesus.
But obviously, as you get more popular, it is harder and harder to keep up with the never-ending wave of comments, especially when there's a lot of negative ones. And you also kind of, as the article talks about, kind of experience that mental trick curse where the negative stuff really sticks with you much more than any of the positive stuff does. So really this game is interesting from an empathy generation point of view.
Right. So does the accumulation or the rise in prominence of the negative responses over positive ones, does that express mechanically, or is that just like part of the experience of play?
From the video that I watched of it, it looks like yes, it does. Like the negative stuff will become more prominent. And there's a hero power mode from Guitar Hero where like just everything's negative and you just dab. Again, that's from watching very limited video, but I think this is interesting just from games as being a medium that is uniquely good at generating empathy, kind of applying that to one of its own problems and this kind of negativity that you find for online personalities. Yeah. I would be interested if like anyone who isn't already in the camp of don't be mean in comments is actually going to play this and have their minds changed. But it's kind of a cool way to represent something that admittedly a small set of people has to deal with on the scale that's presented.
Yeah.
But I think that everyone experiences some version of online, either first or third hand.
Yeah.
Or second hand.
So, I mean, it doesn't have to be like, this doesn't have to be a persuasive piece of art either. Like this could just be, you know, somebody trying to use a game to describe the problem, not so much like an inherent statement or like change anybody's mind or behavior, right?
It reads almost as venting, like right. Okay, this is what it's like.
Yeah.
And it acts as a very good version of that.
Yeah. Yep. I'm curious about
interesting stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I I looked at it and I was of two minds. I was like, okay, this could just like really bring to mind and make me dwell on kind of a shitty part of my job. That doesn't happen very often, but still sucks when it does. Or it could be like a good description and like a, yeah, this does suck. I've never dabbed on a bad comment, but I have just kind of like, well, okay, I'm gonna walk away from this.
It's kind of, is there catharsis there, or is it just accurately capturing a negative emotion?
Right.
You know, I don't know why I was thinking about this today, but for some reason I was thinking about like some of the kind of BS stuff you guys have gotten on Watch Out for Fireballs for like not quote unquote really being indie games that you're playing, or not indie games, but retro games.
Right.
I have you ever tried just like when someone says there's something, just like laughing maniacally and being like, yeah, but try convincing the sheeple of it, you fools.
Certainly it never really happens in person. Like there was that one really annoying time when a 13-year-old came up to us and said, like, because we covered something on the N64, like we weren't really a retro game show or whatever. Okay. This is a strange situation. Like, that was annoying, and that became a story for later on. It never really happens online if somebody grouses, and they haven't, because we've changed the we've changed the mission of the show, so it hasn't happened in a while. You know, it really wasn't worth even responding to in the moment.
I know. I still kind of like the idea of trolling them.
Yeah, and I feel fair warning, in case it wasn't clear as I was talking about it. If you go check this out and want to play it, great. The comments are a very accurate representation of what you will see on the YouTube comment feed. So
right.
Nothing's blanked out. No sentiments are eased. So be prepared for that if you're gonna check it out.
Yeah,
those is so frustrating, because like, I generally don't read the comments, but on the other hand, like, there have occasionally the stars align, and I'll read a YouTube comment that's just hilarious, just makes my day. But it's like the signal to noise on that means that like it's usually not worth the trouble.
You just need like Twitter to aggregate it for you. Oh wait, no, Twitter's a horrible place too.
Yeah,
there's
neither any place to run nor hide. YouTube got a little bit better because they brought in kind of a Reddit style like upvote kind of system. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. on videos that are popular enough not to just have one or two comments, you know, occasionally it'll be something funny or helpful that is hanging out up at the top, which doesn't necessarily make it worth like seeking that stuff out. But if you accidentally scroll beyond, you know, the Maginot line there at the bottom of the share buttons or whatever, you're not going to experience something utterly repulsive unless that's what everybody has decided is the right way to go for this.
Because yeah. Just like the real Maginot line, if you cross it, you often get Nazis.
Jeez. Yeah. then I got sad.
So the of, I guess, relevant to this, Twitch announced a like private room chat this week as well.
Yeah.
Which should go a long way towards helping things, and I don't know why it's taken them this long.
So they've had subscriber-only chat for a while, just separated off. I don't, mm-hmm. I don't quite like. I'm probably not going to deploy this on the Duckfeed channel, honestly.
I was going to ask that. Do you ever power play it?
What's that?
Sub if you want to. Do you ever power play it? Like sub if you want to talk?
No. I don't. We don't. We never have enough viewers or participants to make it worth like having that kind of sorting kind of stuff. But even so, like the multiple chat rooms, it's more intended to take a bite out of a crime, not really crime. I just said that weird. No, it's more intended to bring streamers back from their own private Discord servers.
Yeah.
So like, you know, if while you're watching this person stream, you want to have a room where people can go and discuss open source programming or whatever, you name your topic, you can do that. I can't imagine what the use would be and why people would be there to chat about something that is not what is happening on the stream.
I was gonna say, this will tie into like what we talk about when what we've been playing, but yeah, this happened recently where when I was streaming and like the chat was like dead, but then we just found out that there was a Discord channel where everyone was talking on that, and it's like, okay
fine, as long as you guys are having fun. I like seeing it go on.
Yeah.
Oh, Dennis. No, Ben. Ben. You know, then Dennis did the dab on him hater story. Ben, you have the loot box story. What's new with this? With loot boxes, a favorite topic of ours.
Yeah. So the important part is Hawaii introduced legislation that any game that has loot boxes in it cannot be sold to people under the age of 21, which is like a pretty big deal, I guess. I don't know. That's, I haven't seen a law like that. I mean, that's pretty restrictive, and it circumvents ESRB ratings. Right. It would just be straight up, if there's a game with a loot box, you can't sell it to somebody over 20, under 21.
Regulating it as though it was gambling.
I think this is clearly a plot by Big Ukulele to suppress the bard's preferences for loots over ukuleles.
suppress the non-chill vibes. So that, I mean, that's an interesting bill in itself. It was proposed by a senator of Hawaii, Representative Chris Lee, and it's kind of reactionary to when EA released Battlefront 2 last year. He criticized that, and this is kind of fruition of that sort of, being upset with that. And then a day after that bill was proposed, a senator from New Hampshire sent the ESRB a letter employing them to start tracking data of, like, how much money is being made off of game with loot boxes and who's paying for it. You know, is it kids or is it adults and that sort of thing?
Yeah,
I feel like that could backfire.
What do you mean?
I'm not sure I want the evil corporations to know how much money they can be making off of loot boxes.
So it seems like there's starting to be a crackdown against, like, loot boxes in that sense. I mean, right now it's only one state that's proposing it, but then the idea is if that sort of thing passes and games still, and companies still want to sell games in Hawaii, then they'll have to make kind of like two versions of it, and then other states might opt into that sort of program. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. I haven't thought this through enough, and my reaction to this would be knee-jerk, probably just as knee-jerk as some of these laws are, maybe. I know I want fewer loot boxes in games. I think that would be a net positive. There are any number of ways these laws might actually cut in a weird direction that I haven't foreseen, so it's hard to... It's hard to know how to say if this is good or not.
So I know
only the preferred government approved sponsor can sell loot boxes, and everyone needs to route their loot boxes through them, and blah blah blah.
Loot neutrality.
Net neutrality.
All right, we have to come down on what's the title proposal: net neutrality or loot neutrality?
I still like net neutrality.
Okay.
Kind of a story from my own experience is a lot of my friends who I play Rocket League with, we've kind of all kind of come to the same conclusion where we've kind of stopped buying loot boxes at Rocket League, or at least it's tapered off. I don't know.
Rocket League, most of their stuff was purely, purely cosmetic, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So it's like toppers on your car or animations when you score a goal or things like that. I mean, on the one hand, I think I still stand by, you know, it was good to support them for a little bit, you know, since you only paid $20 for the game in the first place and I played it for like 2 years. But I think that's probably a good direction to go, is to limit loot boxes, especially putting an age restriction on it, maybe. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, I feel like what a little bit, you know, does always get mentioned or whatever is, you know, they're only loot boxes because it's random what you get. Mm-hmm. So, like, I know, I guess, like, you know, with wanting to, like, support the game, stuff like that, like, I totally get that. But then, like, let me buy what I want. Don't, like, you know, don't pull in this, you know, like, weird gambling thing and be like, what other way could we possibly sell things to people?
I mean, it's all a way of obfuscating value, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's my point, though. It's like, it frustrates me that people like my caricature of game companies, you know, make it out like it's, you know, about selling people things, where it's like, no, it's about manipulating how you sell things.
I could see. I can see it going to like an arcade direction where it's like, here, you just get tickets. You can buy tickets and then you can buy whatever prize you want with these tickets, you know?
Well, they already do that. Like games have, you know, free-to-play games have their own alternate currencies, right?
Right. Yeah. So that's I think that's
technically not gambling, right?
Right. And I'd say like, even though I still think that's less than ideal, I think that takes away like some of the real moral hazards or whatever you want to call it. That's kind of a bit far, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Around loot boxes.
I just like the idea of the nerdy teen going to their crooked uncle asking for a fake ID. And the uncle's like, so you can get into the bars? Yes, to the bars.
to the space bar, which I press to open it and see if I get a new spoiler.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
I will tell you about the question, but first, do you know why you confuse people's names, like the science in behind that in your mind?
No, I don't. So, but I do it all the time.
Yeah, so your mind puts people like into categories, and it just kind of randomly pulls from the folder. So generally, the big grouping is like people that you love, and you tend to mix up their names more than anything else. So there you go.
So I thought that it was this doesn't explain why I sometimes mix up Ben with you, Dennis. But I thought that it was because
you don't love one of us?
No, it's just weird. I know what names I mistake, but I thought with Dennis and David, it makes sense because it is both D sounds. In my life, pretty much my entire family has names that begin with K, and all of my older relatives, they will like go through the loop of like, Cole, Chris, Kyle, Kevin, Kathy, like it sounds like the K. And I thought that it was literally just because all of our names began with the same sound. But your description makes sense, Dennis.
Yeah, we're all in the same file in that filing cabinet.
Dennis was the one who said that, right? Which one are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's also dementia, but
Oh, God, please don't say that. It's so scary.
Fair.
But Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
So the question is, we get a lot of chances to name characters in games. So what is the character name that you're the proudest of, and what's the story behind it? I offered up, although I don't know if anyone took it, if they wanted to share like the story behind their screen names as well. But we'll read on and find out.
Yeah. So John writes in saying, I used this alias as my character's name in Persona 5, which to me is pretty entertainingly meta. John is not John's real name. This is the person that Jolly refers to as the secret agent. I think they signed up for a fake Facebook account so they could comment on stuff for the show.
When everyone knows he's really Craig.
Yeah. Say Craig. Hi, Craig. Yeah.
First one that came, I don't know why Craig came to mind first. Interesting. Anyway.
Yeah. Ben, what does Michael say?
Sorry, I had followed John's profile to look into that. Michael says, when I was in high school, I wrote a couple of short fiction novels for fun. Never published them or anything. I always name my game characters after people from the books. If a game allows for it, I even base the character's build on the book character's powers. It helps bring a little more to my role-playing games.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
That's pretty interesting.
Cool. And it makes it easy to have a pool you can pull from.
You see, there's something to be said for just having a good name in your back pocket.
That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, Sam and Dean is always a good name.
Jeremy being a network co-host, Jeremy Greer, doing Sam and Dean because he also does a show about the show Supernatural where Sam and Dean Winchester.
I just now put it together that literally Sam and Dean is the name, because I was like, I don't, he posted a picture of Fire Emblem Heroes with this convention. I was like, I don't remember you being able to name two characters in Fire Emblem Heroes.
Yep, he named the one character Sam and Dean.
That's good. That's really good.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Graham say?
Graham says, one time when I started up a new playthrough of Fallout 2, I picked the name Nephilim because I just heard about the biblical Nephilim and thought they sounded cool. Naming myself after a biblical monster inspired me to try an evil playthrough, but what started out as a moderately sinister playthrough soon turned downright Lovecraftian. While in the first town, Calamath, my attempt at progressing down the evil path of my side quest backfired when the citizens of Calamath found out I was trying to harm them, the whole town turned against me. I killed everyone. Then I moved on to the den and killed everyone there too. Then I progressed from town to town, killing every last person. If it was too hard, I'd come back later when I was stronger. It became a puzzle of gaining levels by raising progressively harder and harder settlements. Sometimes I'd get huge XP bonus by killing plot-related NPCs tied to side quests. Oh my gosh.
It's like Katamari Damacy, but with murder.
Well, who was it? One of the people, friends of the network, did a playthrough of Dark Souls where they literally killed everything in.
We talked about that last week. They ran down the respawn counters and all the monsters and stuff.
Okay, there we go. That one. And then I think someone did just one without touching a bonfire, killing everyone in Dark Souls 2. Anyway,
yeah.
Graham finishes, I never finished that playthrough, but I'm sure it's plenty doable to beat that game, even if you've killed everyone aside from the people in your hometown.
Arroyo,
there we go, wearing plot armor.
So Graham rolled out of the Temple of Trials and looked around and said, they call this a wasteland, but it could be more wasty.
There's been a nuclear apocalypse. You need to finish the job.
To be fair, when a dude named Nephilim rolls into town, like, if you're not like already watching your back, that's on you.
Yeah. Wait, so weren't, I mean, so the Nephilim were not human, but weren't they human angel hybrids?
Yeah. So that's the traditional interpretation. However, the passage is super, super vague.
Okay.
Probably my favorite theory for this I've heard is that, from a, evolutionary standpoint, there's, evidence that at one point, humanity, interbred with
Neanderthals.
And that's highly your percentage of Neanderthal DNA is a very good predictor of how likely you are to have mental health problems
and how much angel you have in you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that's my favorite. Like, there's no evidence from the passage to support that, but that's my favorite. Just like off the wall, like probably will eventually be like a sci-fi book.
Oh, I'm positive good. That exists already.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that one.
I heard the angel human hybrid. I heard it's just like warriors and kings from those areas.
Uh-huh.
And then I also, as I was reading it, when they come back and talk about them, it literally prefaces it saying they wanted to make the place sound scary, so they gave a false account, and that's where the Nephilim are.
Oh,
so it's like
here there be dragons.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. Anyway,
isn't there some implication also that like Goliath was maybe at least said to be a Nephilim or something?
He was a Philistine, right?
Well, yeah, ethnically, he was Philistine. Like that is the people group he was part of. But I want to say there was like, he was supposedly a giant, and I want to say that there's like
that's the other theory that I've heard is that the Nephilim were giants, like the giants that lived east of Eden.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's a super obscure.
But
passage of scripture that has then become like a ton of pop culture.
Yeah, I mean, like the place where I used to work, it had a high percentage of people who I think went to the same church as you, Dennis, and roll in similar circles as you, David. And I would have conversations with them, just about biblical stuff in general, because it's interesting to hear things people are interested in, but also especially focusing on the parts of the Bible that are basically from the Monstrous Manual.
Yeah.
Not making light of anybody's faith, but it's interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. continuing. So good story, Graham. Lindsay writes in saying Dark Souls 2's character creator has been a favorite of mine from day one. Treva with two V's was the name of my first character to get through Dark Souls 2. So I kept that name in Dark Souls 3, Dark Souls 1, and Demon Souls. Unfortunately, I could not make Treva look as beautiful as he clearly does with all of the games. It was nice to beat every game in the series with him. Treva, you are number one in my book. Holy shit. I don't quite know how to describe Treva's whole steez.
Pink.
It's like very yeah. pink. It's the world's most improbable sunburn.
Clownish.
Very, very clownish, but also with some very impressive neck muscles. He's got a real case of like Henry Rollins trapezius muscles or whatever those are.
His delts are popping.
Popping delts are those.
No, I just can't look at him and not think that he went suntanning in like tack gear.
Ben, what does Mark say?
Mark says, playing read-only memories, a cyberpunk detective adventure game. My character named my character Armitage in reference to the Shadowrun character and to the character from William Gibson's Neuromancer. I was quite happy with the double callback to the previous notable cyberpunk media.
Oh yeah, you always see Armitage dropping up in there. You're continuing the tradition.
I just started reading some of Gibson's stuff, and it is so good.
I've only ever read Neuromancer. What else are you picking up?
Actually, because of what the bookstore had, I actually started with Count Zero, which is the second in the series after Neuromancer.
Okay.
But I don't know. I'm really interested to know where a lot of that stuff, like where a lot of you know the aesthetics and stuff like that he basically you know laid down in that you know kind of became cyberpunk, where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
Just because like it's very, very you know unique and like obvious that he had an idea of like what things would look like.
Mm-hmm.
But like if you ever like look up the dude or something like that, like he is the most like he is super just like nerdy academic writer dude. Like he clearly is not someone that's like going around to like you know the punk subculture doing the thing or whatever. So
right. Oh, sure, wondered, you write like, about hunting robots, but have you actually hunted any robots? It doesn't look like it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean though? Like how did you decide just like, you know what? In the future, I think everyone's going to wear leather and have neon blue hair. Like
I mean, so like some of it comes from like I mean it's literally punk, like he was pulling from punk stuff.
That's true.
But also like Snow Crash is a different book. I had looked up because I forgot who wrote Snow Crash and I was going to make a joke about Neal Stephenson's whole steez. But Neuromancer came out in like 1984, which was 2 years after the movie version of Blade Runner, and like a bunch of that, like a bunch of that stuff follows after like Philip K. Dick generally.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So there's like direct antecedents or inspirations that you could see, like Gibson, you know, cool creative guy, but also I don't know his politics or whatever, or if he's done anything horrible. He makes good notable stuff, but like a lot of it is synthesis of stuff that was around.
Actually, he's since post 9/11 gotten a lot of his work's actually gotten really political and really, really interesting.
Huh.
Just like he kind of what we've joked about like we are now in the darkest cyberpunk timeline.
Right,
like,
right.
He sort of realized like, oh, I don't have to write sci-fi anymore. No, I can just write modern stuff and it be exactly the same.
Yeah.
Huh. Hashtag Black Mirror.
I haven't seen any of those, but everybody tells me I should.
Don't there. Yeah.
Yeah. Bum you out.
Oh, Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm afraid that they're going to throw me out of out of Silicon Valley for never having seen any of them.
Yeah.
They're great.
Which is
it's like
kind
the Twilight
of ironic.
Zone.
Yeah. So yeah. Like I'm down for some Twilight Zone. I just never took the time to sit down, even though I know I'd love it if I did. And I have no excuse. Mm-hmm. David, what does Corbin say?
Corbin says, Mines, my Fallout New Vegas character. I asked my partner at the time for a good 1950s name, and they said Rose Delaney, which has been my Fallout character name from then on.
Nice.
That's really a good 1950s solid name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good. Man, I love New Vegas.
Like, I I can't even add anything to that. That's just a very solid 1950s name.
And I really want to go play New Vegas. But I played something, from that line, which I can talk about in the...
She's definitely played by Renee Zellweger.
What? Can you describe that? Can you tell me how you got there?
Renee Zellweger has that real, like, 1950s personality look.
Hmm. She got plastic surgery, and she looks very different now. I don't know about better or worse, but she doesn't look as distinctive as she did before.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I just Googled her, and she definitely does.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Dennis, what does Robert say?
Robert says a druid in World of Warcraft named Dream, because he sometimes dreams he's a cat. Sometimes he dreams he's a bear. Sometimes he dreams he's a cow. And that's just strange.
I feel like the bad part of that would be that, you know, after you dream you're a cat, you then wake up covered in blood.
Yeah, that's your DPS. I dreamed I was DPS.
I like the little, you know, internal fiction there for World of Warcraft that every time you transform, you're literally pulling everyone else into your lucid dream.
Oh, geez, that's horrifying.
Yeah.
Allison writes, I named the protagonist of Persona 5 Jeremy Greer, and it never stopped being funny. Let me see who liked this. It wasn't Jeremy. It was Jack. I haven't played Persona 5, so I don't know that I have anything to add. Aside from, it's very funny to imagine Jeremy Greer being in trouble and staging mind heists. Ben, what does Sam say?
Sam says, starting when I first played Symphony of the Night and continuing to this day, whenever I play a vaguely spooky RPG, the save file of the main character is always named Alucalb?
Alucalb! That is so good! Continue.
It's not so much pride as it is a dislike of having to think of names. I wish every game had a name generator as good as the one in West of Loathing.
Oh, that's so good. I can't wait for the expansion.
What does Alucalb mean?
So Alucard is Dracula backwards.
Alucard being the main character of Symphony of the Night. Making a standard reason that Alucalp is Blackula backwards. That's very good.
Yep.
David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, I've always used Soulblazer as my online name as much as I can, if the game or format allows. Not because I love the game. It's a good action RPG for the SNES. Because I love the name. Blazing of Souls sounds wicked cool.
Yeah. And I've seen that. I can confirm he is Soul Blazer on Twitch.
Nice.
Yeah. And then Dennis, round us out with Patrick.
Patrick says, playing Ultima 7 for the first time, I named my avatar Avatar. I didn't think this would be a problem since I was used to the dialogue of the older games where you typed in all your answers. Unfortunately, in 7... the answers are all in a list, and sometimes a character asks you for your name. If I wasn't careful and I was in a town where they didn't like the avatar, I could get myself in trouble by picking the avatar instead of avatar. It's like saying Ohio State instead of the Ohio State in Columbus.
People get very angry.
That actually came up recently.
So he finishes, not quite proud, but it did teach me how important paying attention in an RPG can be, a skill that I've kept since then. That's great.
It's always a avatar, not your avatar.
Ah, I see.
Yeah. Both of you talked at the same time. Ben, what'd you say?
I said I'm frowning into the microphone right now.
Because of my Fight Club reference?
Yeah.
And David, what did you say?
Have any of you guys played any of the Ultima games?
No, so I've played a little bit of Ultima 4. We're coming up on doing Ultima Underworld for WoW. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that's just a weird, like, super, I don't know, void where, like, I know the games were super influential and, like, a big thing at some point, but they...
You just had to be a PC role-playing game person at a particular time and place, and they haven't been as, like, persistent in the front of people's minds like a lot of major JRPG series have been for consoles.
Sure. Exactly.
Yeah. So I've got mine. The name I use for any kind of like fantasy or sci-fi thing is just arsenic. Arson spelled like the crime and then YK at the end. Like, you know, like no good Nick or whatever. Yeah, arsenic is something that I do, and you know, it's a fun name. The one that I'm most proud of, there's a section in Suikoden 2 where you have to give fake names to two of your characters so they can sneak into a university. and I decided to name them Rizza and Jizza. RZA and GZA. and they were always referred to as a pair, like it was part of the Wu-Tang Clan enrolling for classes at Magic Academy. It was very good. Nice. So that's mine. Ben, how about you?
14-year-old, spoiler alert, but when in Knights of the Old Republic, when I was beating it like multiple times or whatever, started to get more creative with game names. I named my character Darth Revan one of the times I was playing it through.
Wait a minute. You mean Darth Revan is Darth Revan?
Yeah, but it's just funny for the first half of the game when people are just calling you Darth Revan and just like, oh, wait, you're Darth Revan? Oh, my God.
Yeah. I did a similar thing with Final Fantasy VII. It was much lamer, but you get a character named Red 13. It's like a dog man or a lion man kind of person. And then you eventually find out his real name is Nanaki. And so I named that character Nanaki just for the purpose of, you know, 8 hours into this game, having the box say, wait, Nanaki's real name is Nanaki. Yeah. I had a
Be
lot
fair,
of time.
If I was named Nanaki, I think I'd rename myself too.
Yeah. It was like a science experiment. It wasn't a real sunny chapter in his life. David, how about you?
I'm not sure I have one, honestly.
You have a scheme, though, right? Like, you generally pick the names of ghosts, right?
Yeah, that's usually how I go. I think just because, like, I really liked, traditional folklore.
Right.
And so, yes. And then also because there are a ton of good, obscure ones so that, you know, I can deal with the fact that all games exist in a world where, you know, you only one person can be named Bob.
Right, right. So you just pick a different synonym and you roll on.
Yep.
It's a good scheme. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so the one I'm probably most proud of was from City of Heroes, coming up with a superhero name.
Yes.
And the character I kind of invented this whole backstory about how there's a cult or like a villain group in City of Heroes that's like obsessed with like ghost stuff and resurrecting people and all this stuff. So she basically was like a failed experiment for that they, you know, that she got away from them during the ritual. And the name I picked for her was Simulacra, which Simulacrum is like something that is a shadow of its former self.
Like a pale imitation.
Yeah. A pale imitation. Exactly. And all her powers were centered around kind of like, ghost and invisibility and that kind of stuff. So shadow related stuff.
Yeah.
So the just the name and the power set, and then like the in-world story elements all kind of came together in a really cool way.
Nice.
You saw a lot of really good names in City of Heroes.
Yeah, it really, really, that was even more conducive to people letting out their creativity than, and I think you saw more, for whatever reason, you saw more like really earnest names. Like, I feel like so many MMOs, it's another screen name, right? Like, you don't care. However, something about the superhero genre had people take it a little more, not take it more seriously, but just put more genuine effort and care into it.
Yeah.
I think my favorite I ever saw was, woman with, stone-based powers whose name was Monolive.
Oh, nice.
Like, that's pretty good.
Well, thank you everybody for writing in. If you want to participate in these, the prompts go up on Monday afternoons, and you can find them at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past week or so. Because all of us were here, and because I have something new, I don't believe I've talked about this on the show before. It makes sense for me to go. Guys, I played and beat Prey.
Oh, cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I decided.
That's quick.
quick for me, for sure. It's like a 16-hour game. I put some time into it. I played like the opening a while back, like after it came out, and then I did that usual thing I do where I play a couple of hours a game, put it down for a year, then pick it up, and then basically beat it in a sitting.
Mm-hmm. Did you stream it at all?
No, I didn't. This one, this was one for Daddy. This was just for me. It would make sense to, because it is, you know, a horror themed game. So do we need any biographical information on Prey? The 2017 version, not the 2006 Xbox 360 launch.
Only to the degree that I'm interested to hear, like, what's its thing.
So, it has a couple of things to it. If I was to describe in general something that like is going to stick with me and kind of like I'm just going to roll around for a while, it would be like its adherence to a theme.
Okay.
Like the story and kind of the stuff it is trying to get across is something you can't really go into too much detail about, because like it is pretty holistic, but it involves a lot of stuff that happens at the end. Okay. So it's hard for me to say that mechanically. So the game is very much like, it feels like this could be a System Shock 3. All that it is missing is Shodan, honestly. All that it's missing is the menacing computer AI that is tormenting you because it hates humanity.
Being incredibly timely.
It kind of feels similar to Dead Space in this gameplay, too, where there's like, it's scare after scare after scare almost.
Yeah. So the idea is you're on this fucking gorgeous kind of scientific research space station that, you know, is around the moon. It's very near Earth, and they're doing research on these creatures called the Typhon, which are these, they look like just like black masses of like tentacle goop. Think like, you know, the stuff that makes up Venom and Spider-Man or whatever, except at a very basic level, the smallest ones of them, they're called mimics, and they can turn into anything in a scene. So for the first third of the game, you'll walk into a room and you'll think, huh, that's weird. That desk has two chairs. And then at the second you walk close to it, boom, it turns into a monster and attacks you. Or it's
so that just results in you walking into a room and attacking every inanimate object.
I mean, yep. resources are very, very scarce. But what it does is it sets itself up to be kind of a, you know, like it's not scripted scares. There are scripted scares in it, but, you know, in general, it's not like, okay, and then here's the point where something crawls out of the vent behind you. No, it's just kind of like out there. And in general, it's very survival horror-y, again, like System Shock is, because they keep a real tight lid on your resources. You know, like you are kind of scrimping and saving, trying to basically keep yourself in med kits. And stuff like that. There's an empowerment curve to it, where eventually you get the ability to like upgrade yourself with psychic abilities and things, but that comes with a trade-off, because if you give yourself the psychic abilities, that is derived from alien tissue, and all of a sudden the station's defenses will stop recognizing you as human.
Oh, huh.
And so like I went entirely human. I didn't use a single one of those psychic ones, because like I really enjoyed being able to like pick up these turrets and like basically set up little combat arenas for myself that I lured the bigger enemies into.
Nice.
Yeah, very cool.
Good.
I want to say a side note. I don't like the fact that the mimics can mimic coffee, because that ruins coffee for me.
Yeah, they really do love just being mugs, because it doesn't really, you know, like, you have more than, I've got two mugs on this table right now. Oh God, no.
Yeah.
So does it sort of become a bit of kind of a logic puzzle in terms of like, you know, going in and trying to figure out what's not right?
So that kind of ceases.
That would be cool.
Part of the empowerment curve is you have to deal with those things for a while. You know, like not knowing where everything is. And then eventually you get a scope that will highlight basically any enemy that's in the area. And then it becomes about finding and scanning these enemies so you can, you know, upgrade with their abilities and stuff. Like the game goes through multiple kind of different, let's just say like pockets of like, okay, this is what the game is about now.
Okay.
Yeah. One thing that I really enjoy about it too, just from a purely mechanical level, in a lot of like vent crawler games, like your Deus Exes and what have you, you're picking up a bunch of junk, and it's usually just like inventory trash or has a very specific kind of application for it. In this, pretty much the entire economy runs on raw materials that you get by recycling items and fabricators. Like, you find plans and say, like, okay, you need like 3 mineral material and 2 synthetic material to make shotgun shells. And you get that by taking all the junk that you picked up around the station, like banana peels and burnt out circuit boards. You load them into a machine. They're turned into matter cubes or matter spheres. And then and then you load those in, and then you get new stuff. So, like, something that is amazing about this, the spaces in this game are amazing. Like, climbing around these different labs, finding new ways into labs, and just kind of, like, basically picking up anything that isn't nailed down, but just, looking for it, paying really close, fine-tooth attention to the way this stuff is kind of laid out. This lived-in space was lived in, right? Is incredibly rewarding, and that is compounded by the fact that you have something called the glue gun, the GLOO, which is a nonsense sci-fi acronym. However, what it is, it's a gun that basically shoots these big solid globets of foam that you can use to create like stairways or extra ledges to jump up on, or to create like little bridges along walls between broken areas of floor and stuff. So the geometry that they give you doesn't really matter so much, because you do have this gun that can just basically let you create level geometry on the fly.
Can you like build traps out of it?
No, you'll occasionally come across like places where, as the people on the station were trying to contain the Typhon, they like would seal off a room with a bunch of this stuff. You're like, wait a minute. Okay, well, I'm going to go into this bathroom. You take out your wrench and you whack it, and then just all of a sudden there's as many mimics as you've ever seen just flooding out of it.
Oh, no.
It's like a spider nest.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. It's a good game. There's a certain point, like, in the last third where it's just kind of like, oh, this is a little bit padded, but it's really neat, and it's frustrating to see that, like, it is maligned because its launch... At launch, it was very buggy, and a lot of people had bad experiences with it, so I kind of fell off of kind of the discussion about games at large last year. Like, I was guilty. I didn't continue playing it. I wasn't an advocate for it. But it was definitely well worth putting the time into. And even through the sagging parts, like, it finishes so strong that I'm like, oh, like, it has made me think about every single step I took along the way to get there. So you played a demo of this, Ben, right?
I did, yep. Yeah. And I watched Jonathan Blow play the demo of this as well.
Oh, nice.
Or at least the first part.
Yeah. So, yeah, Prey. That's what I've been playing.
Nice. Very cool.
Yeah.
Any other smaller things?
No. I know what I'm trying to get
You've
started
also
on.
Been playing Alan Wake.
Yeah. I streamed that. I wanted to wait till I was done with it. I didn't get it as much streaming as I wanted to. People can find those.
I need to go back to that.
Yeah. I like it. It's the first time I've gone back to it. You know, like, basically when I first played it, I hadn't really read a lot of Stephen King. Like, I read just this one book about writing. But it's a series. It's a game that cribs very heavily from Stephen King style stuff, from Twin Peaks style stuff. So going back to it and having the additional knowledge that I have of the stuff that it's referencing has been pretty fulfilling. So
what is that team done recently?
Quantum Break.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the Mad Max.
Blah. Yeah. Max Payne. Yeah. So I really love Max Payne, and I have loved what I've played so far of Alan Wake. I'm going to have to track down Quantum Break.
Yeah. It plays really well. Good.
Yeah. I've only played like the first, like, maybe hour of Quantum Break, but it's the same sort of thing where it's like they have very detailed environments and they're really fleshed out, and it's really fun to walk through.
Yeah. I forgot how fast and fluid Alan Wake's play is, which isn't something you associate with action games and horror.
Use those words.
Yeah. Huh. But like, it has a dodge button, which is kind of crazy. I don't remember that being as much of a factor, but like, dodging is a huge part of that game.
Yeah. And I love that. I really enjoyed that they actually justified him, like, knowing how to use the gun well.
How do they do that?
If you go, when you do the flashbacks, if you look on, like, his bookshelf, he was apparently real big into the Marksman Club when he was in college.
Oh, yeah. He has, like, a golden trophy gun. I made a note of that when I was playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten how many times he says, damn it, Alice, throughout the playthrough of the game.
He really doesn't like his wife. But yeah.
Definitely a mixed message, yeah. In terms of
trying to help her. I'm going to try and get another session in this week. I'm going to be out of town this weekend, so I'm not going to be able to stream at the usual times.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Who wants to go next?
I'll go.
Go, Ben.
All right. I finished The Witness. I did a 4-part streaming of that on Twitch. We 100% of the game, me and my old coworker. That was fun. It was kind of to the point where it's like on the fourth week, there's not as much to say about it. You kind of get most of like the behind the scenes stuff out the first 2 weeks or so. But it was still interesting to see kind of, I guess the locked away parts of the game is kind of what you are working on in the last fourth of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It gets very like meta in certain points where there's like audio commentaries in the game. And so then, in certain parts of the game, the audio commentaries, the people reading the speeches start to break character and kind of, even though they're still acting, they're acting as if they're breaking character. I don't know.
And addressing you, the nominal player, directly, or?
It's kind of like, so the premise of The Witness is you're on an island, you solve puzzles, and then there's these audio logs scattered around the island, and they're usually quotes from, like, famous people that are supposed to be somewhat profound or something, supposed to offer some sort of insight to the human experience, I guess.
It's Jonathan Blow saying, this is a pop philosopher or psychologist that I really like.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
And the audio logs inside a certain place of the game in the last fourth of it, it'll be someone reading a quote, and then afterwards it'll be them talking about, like, talking about the work that they're doing. So it's like as if they're it's kind of as if they're characters that are populating this island and trying to flesh it out, as if this is like an actual place that people are building.
Yeah.
And they're talking about, like, you know, the work they're doing, and there's like meta conversations that are kind of like Charlie Kaufman-esque, where it's like, hey, maybe we should record audio logs of ourselves recording our audio logs to, like, show the human experience, you know. It's things that I didn't really remember playing through the first time, so that was interesting. And kind of the like one of the kind of like secret endings of the game was interesting to play through because it's an area that I've only seen a couple of times. One thing that was nice is there's a challenge area of the game that we were able to beat on the second try through, which is pretty atypical. Usually you play it half a dozen to a dozen times before you get close. So that was nice. Anyway, yeah, that game's really good. So it's fun to, like, play that game and kind of try and analyze that game.
Nice.
Anyway, talking about a game more recently, I've continued playing Subnautica. That game continues to be really cool. I've kind of gotten to the point where I think I kind of know. I've explored more now, so I feel like I have a better handle on things. I feel like I'm, like, probably, like, two-thirds of the way through in terms of the game and in terms of, like, exploring the world that they offer. I found, like, the boundaries of the game, the way that they gate off certain areas. Yeah, I don't know. I still enjoy it. I definitely kind of want to finish it. Finishing it requires to explore certain areas that I haven't found yet. So kind of at this point, I'm trying to explore more areas to get resources to finish the game. It's still pretty cool, though. It is really nice how the way they do story in that game. It's like completely hands off. They do a good job of trying to show you areas that you might want to explore, but not directing you towards specific areas like, hey, go here, now go here, now go here. So, yeah.
I have just decided to, after weeks and weeks of saying, man, I need to just, like, fight off the urge to buy this, I'm just getting it so I can play it.
All right. When are you going to stream it? Because I want to watch it.
I don't know. I might dip into it just to check it out and see, like, the rhythm of it. Maybe it'll
put it off for a couple years before beating it all in one go.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know. I don't know when I'm going to stream it. So.
Okay. It is a game. It is good to have a Sherpa at some points in the game because there are certain things that are not well explained where, like, someone can easily say, like, hey, this is what you need to do here. Or here, this is what you need to do here.
Yeah.
But
isn't this game supposed to basically be like what, like Damp Souls or whatever? Underwater Dark Souls?
No.
There's not boss battles or anything like that. Even like you could get through without fighting anyone in general.
Yeah, combat is real downplay. This is more like a survival kind of thing.
It's maybe like thinking of the wrong game.
It's like a third exploration, a third Minecraft, and a third something else that I'm not sure of. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, let me know if and when you play this game, because I would really like to watch that.
So. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's really good, though.
Nice. I believe you. You've made a good sale these past couple weeks. So.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Anything else?
Those are the main two, yeah.
Cool. Who wants to go next?
I can jump in.
Do it.
Yeah, so short list this week, just two games. I've continued playing Knack, which is proving to be a ton of fun. The story leaves a little bit to be desired. Like, they look like Pixar characters, but it's not a Pixar-quality story.
I mean, few things are. You know.
Yeah, but you know, there's enough there to get you going for the next MacGuffin, and that's great. It started to incorporate new gameplay elements where Knack, the main character, can absorb different types of materials into himself, and then shrink down to just those materials to get through certain things. So, like, he absorbed icicles to have like frozen armor, or he absorbed transparent crystals so he could walk through lasers undetected. So there's like all these different pieces, to what he can do that you're assembling.
Right.
And that's opened up, you know, slightly new gameplay options. But for the most part, it's very light platforming with a room of combat, very light platforming room of combat. Like I mentioned last week, though, the combat is pretty solid. You can't just mindlessly tap square. You have to think about your encounters, and it's fun to play because of that. So that's continued to be fun. But probably the most fun about it is Luke's continued enamorment with it. He absolutely loves watching the game be played and gets so nervous for Knack while he's fighting. So where he'll kind of cuddle up next to me and watch me play. And by the end of a harrowing encounter, he is all but like hanging off of my neck in anxiety. Yeah. There's a move you can do if you have enough energy that basically will take out all the enemies in a room, but you can really only use it once every four or five encounters, just because it takes time to build up that enemy, that energy. But anytime things get dicey, he'll start, do your blue thing, really, really wanting Knack to pull it out. So it's been absolutely adorable playing with him, and a ton of fun. I'm thinking through whether or not I would want to do a stream where I just give him the mic. And I'm not sure I can set it up where the sound is coming out of the TV and the mic is still functioning.
Right, right.
But I think it would be absolutely hilarious to hear his commentary.
Yeah.
If I can capture it. So I might try that at some point in the near future.
Yeah, people would go nuts for that. Like,
yeah, you should do that.
It's good times. Yeah. So I'll see if I can get that to work. I'm not sure. Otherwise, just keep your eye. I've streamed it while playing just without a mic, because it's super easy to do that on a PS4.
Right.
But yeah, so that's been good times.
Yeah.
Does
Milo, your younger, get in on the fun, or is that more a you and Luke thing?
He'll sit and watch, but he does not have nearly the emotional reaction to it that Luke does. I'm going to go through next though. And as I've been discovering all sorts of, you know, cool games, I Rime is also available on PS Plus, and I think that'll be a good one to play. Mm-hmm. It made me wonder if going back and playing Shadow of the Colossus would be something that he'd enjoy.
Ooh.
Like that just experience, I think, could be really cool. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I wonder if the stuff that is upsetting about Shadow of the Colossus would get through to a 3-year-old.
Yeah, it's on such a different level, or it's like kind of so subtle.
Yeah, but also like kids tune into, like, they can tune into the frequencies of stuff like that really kind of in a different stronger way than we would give them credit for.
Yeah, yeah. Only one way to find out
about,
right?
The horse part.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna need you to leave the room. I'm gonna need you to leave the room. Daddy's gonna cry. I don't want you to see Daddy cry.
I don't know. Yeah. After the number of times the horse like propelled me off the edge of a bottomless cliff, I think it had it coming.
He just thought you wanted to get down there, and he knew the fastest way to do it.
Yeah. So that's Knack. I have no sense for how far through it I am.
Oh.
So I'm just going to keep on going.
Yeah.
And then the other game I've been playing is on my mobile, and I downloaded it before some travel. I just don't think I've had a chance to talk about it, but I finally got around to downloading Desert Golf, or Desert Golfing.
Wait a minute. On your mobile?
On my, you know.
Hit me on my Mobi. Yeah.
Hit me on my Mobi, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, whatever you call that box. That,
yeah, your iPhone. Like, come on.
My iPhone. Yes, that thing. So I downloaded Desert Golfing, and it has been absolutely delightful.
It's great. I love that game.
Yeah, cool. I remember you talking about it. And
week after week after week.
Yeah, well, like mentally, I got like, oh, yeah, it's cool to see a cactus when you don't really like see stuff in the game. But like emotionally, I didn't get it until it happened to me.
Yeah.
And I'm sure on Etsy this exists, but I would seriously consider buying like just a 4-frame, you know, piece of art to hang on the wall of like the 4 holes I've encountered so far that have some kind of feature.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is just like solitary confinement, the game. Like, oh, I'm so happy to see something that isn't just this void.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a little bit of that. It definitely is about playing with the amount of kind of sensory input that you get. You know, you go level after level of just mostly dealing with like undulating terrain with no real adornment or anything. And, you know, there are like subtle changes that happen that you don't notice have happened or have been happening until they're all gone. And then you realize, oh, like, yeah, it's totally, you know, it's totally been happening. I just haven't noticed because I've been very focused in. About your attention and stuff. However, like the thing about it that makes it fun is it is super enjoyable to just hold down on the screen, draw back a little ways, and then see what kind of arc that translates into.
Oh, like, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like that control scheme and the fact that there are really no consequences outside of just like a rough ratio of strokes to holes that you want to have, you know, that you want to maintain. Like, there are no rules. It is just keeping count of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right now I'm hovering in the lower range of between a par 2 and par 3.
Right.
And I would be the competitive side of me would be super interested to see like a leaderboard or people checking in with their like average strokes at a certain marker hole. But yeah, I'm almost to 1,000 holes. I'm just above 900 right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think to the whole like pulling back and firing away, I've found myself defaulting to trying to find approaches that allow me to pull back all the way and use a full power swing.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that is, I can more consistently achieve that. Like that is a very easily knowable quantity. Whereas the second you start taking a little bit of power off, you know, it's a little dicey exactly how much you're taking off. And so I'll kind of try to work my way into, oh, I could bounce it off this wall and back to the hole versus straight in. Even though that's a little bit more complicated, it's more consistent because I'm using a full power swing.
Mm.
The other thing that's been nice is the game is a real meditation on what it's like to be in a groove or in a rut.
Mm-hmm.
Like just in, because there's so little other adornment to it, you're really conscious of that, of just like, I am on fire right now. Everything is clicking right now. And you can think about what that feels like and then maybe what's contributing to that versus just like, I'm missing every single easy putt in this thing. And I like... Like you're in your own head about what it's like to be in your own head on this stuff, which I wasn't anticipating, and I really like about playing it.
Isn't that supposed to be what golf is basically all about?
Yeah, it's very successfully captured that. that's I hadn't thought about it on that level, but that's completely true. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, beautiful, simple little game.
Yeah, I need to play the new game. So it's by I was going to say a studio, but it's definitely just a person. Captain Games. They've got a new game out called Freeways.
Are you saying a person can't be a studio?
No, I'm just I don't want to mislead people about like the size of their operation. They've got a game called Freeways that I heard them talk about on Video Games Hot Dog that is about drawing like highway interchanges.
Oh, sure.
You know, like exits and stuff like that. And it's supposed to have like a little bit of that mini metro kind of appeal. But you know, you can basically just draw whatever you want. It is not like node to node. Like you are drawing a clover leaf on the screen.
Oh my
God,
that's awesome. So this is fun fact about Dennis time. Like for whatever reason, I absolutely love overpasses.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, for some people they're like, oh, I just love bridges. They're so beautiful. For me, it's specifically like overpasses.
Oh, you need to go to Houston.
Yeah, like on road trips, like just anytime we go through, I'm sure Jen is tired of hearing it, but anytime we go through like a complicated overpass, I'm just like, wow, like, oh, look at that. And so this would scratch a very specific and unique to me itch.
Yeah. Go for it. Huh. I think it's like a $4 mobile game. Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm happy you're enjoying desert golfing. It is a fun and good game.
Yeah. Do you know off the top of your head what hole you got up to or are up to?
No, I stopped playing it a few years ago. I think it was somewhere in like the low 2000s or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. I see this very much as a game that can be just a constant companion on your phone through the years. And I imagine some people have that number up insanely high.
It was, but the problem is that I started playing it on both my phone and my iPad, and it became like a quandary of which one did I want to fire up.
Gotcha. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. So Knack and Desert Golf, and that it?
That's about it. More Overwatch, more XCOM 2, but y'all know about those things. I'm streaming XCOM 2 when I play it, mm-hmm. and I'm on like, you know, the Iron Man mode for the hardest difficulty, so I feel like I'm finally legitimately doing something in a video game that's worth watching. and I've been posting that to YouTube, and just recently I went back through and I added a timestamp for when the actual like tactical layer kicks in, the mission part.
Mm-hmm.
For each video, so that if you don't like the macro layer, you can skip straight to the good stuff.
Yeah.
So, nice. That's all I have to say about those.
Cool. David, round us out.
Sure. So I've been playing two things actually. You know, been doing some more Monster Hunter. I'm not sure if I've anything really to add about it. I'm just kind of building up my end game armors in preparation for starting the fighting the Elder Dragons, which are kind of the biggest enemies in the game.
Right.
So yeah, nothing really comes to mind on that. Although I did unlock the Meowlatov cocktail for my Palico, so that just makes my day.
God, I love the Palico so much.
I just heard today, I was reading something, apparently previous versions have eventually gotten DLC where you play as your Palico.
Oh yeah, I want to have a whole Palico side adventure.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome. I am also this was someone on Reddit, so I don't know if like their numbers or if they knew, but they're saying that the projected sales for Monster Hunter World over the lifetime of the game was like 1.5 million, and they had sold like 5 million by the third day after release.
Huh.
So and this was kind of in context of like, this is a game that very explicitly doesn't have any loot boxes or microtransactions. But yeah, so that's mainly that. The other thing I did that's kind of fun is Dennis and I co-opted some Destiny and...
Specifically Destiny 2?
Destiny 2.
Okay.
For the expansion, and basically got in and... Dennis is like, oh yeah, we can run some of the heroic missions. You just, you know, go here to get them. I'm like, okay, well yeah, I'm done with the story. We can do that. And I go to get them and they're not there. He's like, oh, you're not actually done with the story.
Oh, okay.
And so it turns out that like, I probably said this when I was originally playing it, like the story really struck me as just kind of ending and like, just kind of being very anticlimactic. And that turns out that's because I never played the final mission.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We went in and did it. I don't know. The farm mission, it's kind of cool. It's, you know, Dennis described it, I think, accurately as it's kind of a puzzle boss. I would say it's definitely not the most, like, exciting, intense fight I've seen in the game, but it's very satisfying.
Okay.
Specifically because dunking is a core mechanic of the fight.
Oh, so right. Like saying something really catty about them on Twitter?
Yeah. No, you literally go in to dunk on this boss.
Okay.
It's amazing.
So I don't know if for people who haven't played this, for some reason, like, one of the mechanics that they added into that they like to use a lot is sequences where you'll have to, like, get an energy sphere and carry it to a receptacle. However, when you do this, your character always delivers it to the receptacle by, like, jumping up and, like, dunking it in basketball style.
Okay.
And that's kind of a long running sort of semi in joke in Destiny 2, but then the boss fight very much revolves around that. So that was good. The story does end better. I'm still say I think it's an incredibly, like, disappointing lack of use of a really cool core idea. They set this place up as being this, like, what do they even call it? The like, Infinite Forest or whatever?
Yeah, Infinite Forest.
Yeah, as being this, like, basically this, like, multiverse type thing where there's just a near infinite number of, parallel realities. And, you know, as an example, they set it up and when they first introduced it, they're like, oh, don't go in there. You know, no one's ever been able to go in there and find the way back out again. And then that, like, never comes up as an issue. Like, there's never an instance where it's like, oh man, we have to, you know, in Inception style, figure out how do we get out of here? And, like, you know, they just, like, tee up all these cool things and then never do them. Similarly, actually what I was, reminded of, City of Heroes had one of their endgame things where you could go to, like, alternate realities that would change the rules of the game. So it'd be like, you know, what if in this reality, instead of, psychic abilities not working on robots, psychic abilities are now the only thing that can work on robots.
Okay.
Just weird stuff. And, like, that would be a really cool way to add replayability, but there's just nothing to it. Instead, like, one of the end game raids is literally just a slightly more difficult version of one of the bosses from the story. I don't know. I'm very mixed, but, you know, co-op makes everything awesome. So, and we had some pretty good. We had a really good matched loadout between us, so I think that really helped it some. So, yeah. I think that's about all I've got. Any other highlights you'd bring up?
No, the boss, it was fun. Like, you really don't have much incentive to go back and play the story missions again in Destiny 2. And going back to it, especially with a friend, just, you know, they really do know how to design a good game. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I guess I should say this is one of those things where, like, Destiny is a game I really, really love that whenever we talk about, we end up, like, just discussing its flaws. Like, for all I've said, like, yeah, it's, you know, the moment-to-moment gameplay is excellent.
Yeah, yeah. I have... I don't even have any, jabs to take at it. I have no point of reference. And, you know, I'm just happy that you guys enjoyed tackling that together.
The Venn diagram between Cole and Destiny is completely just two circles.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which, it's fine. I mean, it happens.
It's basically imagine Monster Hunter World with more shooting and less monsters.
See, I like...
And less fun.
So, well, no, I imagine people have fun. The problem is I like monsters more than I like shooting, so...
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Side note, did you get any farther in Monster Hunter World?
No. I kind of got in a real prey state of mind. Ah. Yep.
Cool.
Yeah. No, and I'm... If I can figure out how to beat the motion sickness, I'm going to beat Doom next, so...
was that just because of, like, the way the platforming and stuff is?
It moves very fast.
Yeah.
And it gives you a pretty generous field of view option. However, I need to fine tune it. Like, I fired it up for like 20 minutes before we recorded tonight.
If I can't remember, like, there's a lot of parts where you'll be like jumping and then like very suddenly like catch yourself on an edge and like jerk yourself up, you know, those sorts of things, right?
Yeah. I honestly have no idea.
Okay. Well, anyways.
Yep. What are you playing Doom on, by the way?
PS4.
Okay. Right on.
I got it on sale. I mean, it was like $20 or whatever.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool. Well, do we all want to button it up?
I know I do.
Let's do it.
I want to go play Subnautica, so yeah.
The credit. Oh, thanks so much, everybody, for tuning in to this level number 231. We really appreciate it. If you would like to get more of these, you can subscribe on iTunes or, you know, just, I guess, download them one by one. That seems like a weird way to do things, but okay. While you're there, you can leave us a rating or review. We haven't gotten one in a while, and we like seeing that happen. Trying to think of other admin style things, patreon.com/duckfeedtv, and, you know, watch our streams and stuff. You know, you can find all those in our information. Yeah, which I'm gonna say now. So I've been Cole Ross. You can see my streams twitch.tv/duckfeedtv.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter, and I'm trying to look up what my like YouTube channel name is or link is, but search Dennis Furia on YouTube, you'll find me. And then you can find me on Twitch at GreenLaser73.
So I've been David Moneysmith, but I think now I'm going to be Batman.
Okay. No one can take that away from you. And Ben?
I'm Ben Merkel at MerkelB on Twitch.
Yeah. And stick around for some titles. Okay, who's got some?
I got three. Oh, go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, go.
I also have three as well. I have The Dark Light Side. I have Not All That Fluoresces Has Come. And I have A Pool You Can Pull From.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Just a pretty turn of phrase right there.
Yeah. Dennis?
I've got Net Neutrality.
Okay.
I've got The World's Most Improbable Suntan. And then I've got Alucalb.
Alucalb is very good.
It is so good.
It is.
Sorry, it took me a second to remember how to spell Alucalb. Go ahead, David.
So I had Net Neutrality and Not Everything That Fluoresces Is Cum.
Okay. It's not going to be the cum one.
We are slightly classier than that.
It's a fun joke, and I'm not above it. It's just not something I want to put on Front Street.
Mm-hmm.
I like Net Neutrality. That wins by votes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I'm down with that.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go.
All right. Have a good night, guys.
Sure. Take care, everybody.
All right. See you guys.
Bye.
Peace.